Welcome to Technology and the Arts, a bi-weekly podcast exploring the connections between the worlds of technology and art. In this installment, we'll share some interesting news, websites, and online resources we've come across recently, including Microsoft's new commercials with Bill Gates and Jerry Seinfeld, Google's new Chrome web browser, and the Large Hadron Collider. Plus, we'll discuss MySpace.com's new front-to-back concert series, which will kick off with a one-time reunion of Ben Folds 5. We'll talk about all of this and more just ahead on Technology and the Arts for Wednesday, September 10th, 2008. Now, here are your hosts, Brian Kelly and John Lemazny.
Thank you for joining us on another edition of the Technology and the Arts podcast. As always, Technology and the Arts seeks to explore the connections between technology and art and to establish a forum for discussing the impact technology has made on the human creative process and on literature, music, and the visual and interactive arts.
And to let you know who we are, my name is Brian Kelly. I'm a journalist by trade, amateur songwriter, musician, science and technology enthusiast living in central New Jersey.
And my name is John Lemazny. I'm a husband, father, artist, designer, student, manager, musician, poet, speaker, consultant, technologist, and open source evangelist living and working in New Jersey.
John and I are recording this podcast at Houlihan's in Lawrenceville, New Jersey. After not physically seeing John since April, this is actually the second day in a row I've seen him, because my girlfriend Allison and I ran into him, his wife Dawn, and sons Jack and David at Rita's Water Ice in Hamilton the night before this recording. But it's still good to see you again, John. How are you doing?
I'm doing very good. How are you, Brian?
I'm doing well. What would you like to talk about before we get to the technology and arts discussion this week?
The first thing that I'd like to talk about is that I just became responsible in my job at Rider University for a technology called Axis TV, which is essentially an advertising mechanism that goes out to all the televisions around campus. And more or less, I take the requests that people have to have their events advertised, and I turn it into a design that goes up on a television screen. What's really great about this is it gives me the opportunity to very quickly bring together a design, usually with some background images, sometimes with customized design, and it allows me to be creative on an everyday basis. That's a really important thing for me.
Cool.
In my work. On a much less happy note, last Friday, I found out that my father passed away at around 2 o'clock. And I won't go into any detail about that other than to say that my father gave me a lot. He was a very generous man, and I loved him very deeply. I feel very lucky to have spent as much time with him as I did in the last couple of years. He had a really bad scare in the hospital a couple of years back where he essentially lost the ability to breathe without help. He ended up having to walk around with basically an oxygen tank all the time due to emphysema, which made him a lot less mobile, but he was still a very kind, generous, and giving man. And I just wanted to say, you know, thanks, Dad. You did a great job in your life.
Yeah, it was,
we'll miss you.
I was stunned when you told me that, because, you know, obviously you haven't really been that much in touch for the past few months, but, you know, sorry for your loss.
I appreciate that. And, you know, I think that it was not a surprise, per se. I knew in my heart that my father was not going to be around forever. But it was a surprise about how quickly we lose the people that we love. So, just a reminder out there to anybody who's listening, you know, if there's somebody who you really care about, you know, go ahead and reach out and let them know that you care, because you may not be able to the next day. How about you, Brian?
Well, just to shift gears a little lighter note, just want to mention again that Heir Apparent, the tribute to 80s hair metal, from Main Man Records is available for pre-order from mainmanrecords.com, and the CD features a bluegrass version of Twisted Sister's I Wanna Rock, recorded by my friend Christian Beach, who invited me to play accordion on the track, so visit the site to check that out. Also, just want to plug a few of Christian Beach's upcoming shows. He'll be playing at Googie's Lounge at the Living Room in New York City on Saturday, September 13th. He'll be at Kathmandu in Trenton, New Jersey on Wednesday, September 24th. He'll be at McShay's Beach Pub and Grill in Dewey Beach, Delaware, as part of the Dewey Beach Music Conference on Saturday, September 27th. And then he will be performing at Triumph Brew Pub in Princeton, New Jersey, on October 23rd, and at Triumph in Philadelphia on October 29th. So check out www.myspace.com/Christian Beach for details. Also, in the music world, I saw one of my musical idols, Ben Folds, a few days ago, performing with a chamber orchestra in the middle of Tropical Storm Hannah at the Mann Music Center in Philadelphia. It was my first time there, and I have to say I'm not a big fan of the sound system or the acoustics there. However, Ben and the orchestra were great. Never saw Ben with that with an orchestra behind him. Well, there was a funny moment where he started playing the piano intro to Landed, and then the conductor stopped him, and the orchestra came in with the strings, and then she cued him in. So I'm sure it was staged, but it was still funny to see Ben not in control of one of his own shows. And now, shifting gears again and going on to another sad note, I just want to acknowledge the passing of longtime Rider University Director of Public Relations Earl Rommel, who died September 3rd at age 63 after a battle with cancer. Earl was either my boss or co-supervisor at Rider during roughly three of my 6 years working there. He graduated from Rider in 1967 and, after earning 2 Bronze Stars for 2 years of service in Vietnam and working as a reporter for the Trenton Times, returned to the college where he spent the next 35-plus years as Assistant Director of Public Relations, Sports Information Director, and eventually Director of PR. However, he was diagnosed with lymphoma in the spring of 2006, and he retired at the end of August 2007. Earl's PR savvy was instrumental in Rider's programs gaining national prominence. He crafted a press release in 1979 touting Rider's new graduate program in reading language arts that was picked up by the Associated Press and featured in the New York Times. It was Earl who lined up political science professor David Rebovich as a guest analyst on a radio station covering the 1985 New Jersey gubernatorial election. Right after they went on air, Tom Kane was declared the winner of the election, and Dave Rebovich had a lot of time to fill. That appearance launched Rebovich's career as one of the leading experts on New Jersey politics, and he retained that status until his sudden passing last year. Earl was great when it came to that stuff, but he was also a great guy, great sports fan. We made frequent walks to the Rider snack bar for coffee and just talked about Rider sports, his Yankees, my Phillies, and the Eagles. The last time I really worked closely with Earl was when we were volunteering at the NCAA Women's Basketball Tournament, first and second round games being played at Trenton's Sovereign Bank Arena in 2006. He was assigned a bunch of interns to get quotes from the press conferences, while I was assigned to be a microphone holder at the press conferences. On the first day, he sees what he has to work with. He got put in this hot dog stand in the noisiest part of the arena and was given these two 1990s era PCs that weren't networked, barely had a floppy drive, a really awful printer, and they didn't provide any tape recorders or any means to get quotes. So it was just a really bad situation, and he asked me for help, and we struggled through that weekend together, and it was a frustrating but fun time, and that was probably my last big memory of Earl. And the last time I talked to him, he accidentally called me in 2007 during one of Ryder's many crises that year. And so that was the last time I talked to him. But I just want to say goodbye to Earl. He will be missed. And
he will. I had a lot of working experience with Earl. mostly because of web-related stuff, and he was always willing to try something new.
Even if he didn't always understand it.
He didn't understand it. He was always willing to try, and while other people weren't even willing to give that technology the opportunity, he was always willing to try it out and to struggle with it.
That is true. Even though he didn't understand it, he was the only one who ever pushed for that stuff, and a lot of people didn't.
Right. So, thanks, Earl. We'll miss you.
Thanks, indeed. And speaking of goodbyes, this probably comes as no surprise to our regular listeners, but John and I feel the time is right to announce something that we discussed prior to the birth of his second son, David, back in May. And that is the end of the Technology and the Arts podcast. We started this venture of ours in December 2006, and we really were excited to talk about two topics very near and dear to us and share that with an audience. Along the way, we met some really great people, artists, fellow podcasters, webcasting pioneers, filmmakers, musicians, but there just isn't time in my life or John's to do this on a regular basis for much longer. However, that doesn't mean the Technology and the Arts blog will be going away, or that there won't be an occasional podcast showing up on here. We'll still keep posting every now and then to share information related to technology and the arts, and we may decide to record a podcast every now and then, like when we attend the Trenton Computer Festival, or go to Art All Night in Trenton every year. However, we have decided to end the regular Technology and the Arts podcast with our 50th show scheduled for Christmas Eve, December 24th, 2008. And that means we will have completed 2 full years of the podcast, so we felt that's what we should target as our end date. So, John, anything you'd like to add to that?
More than anything, I just want to say thank you. It's been a lot of fun doing this work, and I think that more importantly than me learning as much as I did about the process, which I realized very quickly you knew a lot more about than I did. It was...
And I think we both also learned how much time.
Oh, yeah. But it's engaging and enlightening, but it was a hell of a lot of fun, too, and I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I want to thank you for kind of encouraging this whole thing. We kept on talking about it for so many years to do a podcast, do something, and we finally got around to it. And all things must end, and this is probably the right time to do it.
Oh, yeah. I much rather would have it end like this than some other way.
Right. But like I said, we're not going to end this till Christmas Eve. So until that time comes around, we still have a few shows to do, and I'd like to try and get a few guests on the program again, like we used to when we had time to do interviews. But for now, John, anything related to technology and the arts you would like to talk about this week?
Yeah, it's going to be a short list, but I did want to mention that we're sitting in Houlihan's, and they're gracious hosts, but they don't have any nutritional information. And so, as I was sitting here on my Wi-Fi connection, I was, visiting their website and looking for the calories that I was about to consume, and I know how much calories are in each of the beers I drink, but, like Brian has a nice crisp bread pizza here, which you can gather, what it might be between the cheese and the crust and whatnot. And I had a half a sandwich and soup with rice and beans, which doesn't sound like it should be very much, but there was a lot of calories in what I ate. I would really prefer that I'd be able to get some idea from an official source of how many calories were in what I ate.
How many calories were in the Ritas you had last night?
Oh, probably, because of the cup, a half cup of ice cream is about 150 calories, so it might have been as much as 600 calories.
Yeah, that pretty much stinks. My order wasn't what I thought it was going to be. That's not what I usually get. I usually get like a kid's cup, and they've done something where they've done, not a blendini, I guess, but they've put stuff in it for me, but they didn't know what I was talking about this time, so.
Wow. Yeah, so what I got was a regular gelati, and I got twist ice cream, twist custard, and cherry water ice. It was probably about a cup of ice cream and about a cup of water ice. So, yeah, it might have been 400, 500, 600 calories.
Getting back to Houlihan's, huh?
Yeah, but Houlihan's, you know, step up. You know, it's 2008. Get your nutritional information out there so that we can know what we're putting in our mouths.
Oh, well, did you see this PDF, though? There is a PDF.
Not nutritional information. That's just a menu.
No, this is calories.
Where?
Right here. On the Houlihan's website. If you hit eat. If you hit eats before we start killing Houlihan's. And then it says, for information about our lighter fare that's lower in calories, click here. Now, I don't know what's on there. It has soups and salads. But it doesn't look like it has the white bean.
Well, that white bean soup might as well have been cheesesteak soup. Yeah, you're right. Lighter fare nutritional facts. That's brand new.
But it's just it looks like that's the only stuff they have with the calorie information.
Well.
So it's not a fall, but at least there is some information.
Yeah. I would have liked to have seen that, actually. But
you should have asked me.
I guess so. But it's not complete.
Right.
And so I'm still I have a big question mark where I should have a number. You know? And again, you know, for those of you who listen to the podcast regularly, you know that we're Google junkies and Apple junkies. And I just wanted to give a shout out to Google for their fantastic image search engine, and which I use all the time. But most recently, I've used it for this Access TV thing that I'm doing at Rider, where I have to find a great background, and I have to find one that's Creative Commons licensed. And I can do that with Google's image search. So, now, let's talk about the new Microsoft commercial.
Let's.
And Brian and I were talking about this very briefly last night, and we were in a little bit of a disagreement about what it was about. I think that it is an anti-commercial. I think the point of the commercial...
Well, it's clearly an anti-commercial, but I'm not sure that's...
I think the point of the commercial is to keep Microsoft in the mind's eye of people who are potential Microsoft customers. Plus, you just need a plot line for this commercial. First of all, Seinfeld's walking by at like midnight, walking by a shoe store with a churro somewhere in California.
Well, is it midnight? Because it's daylight when they walk in.
It's not daylight when they walk in. It's nighttime when they walk in. It's daylight when they walk out.
Ah, okay.
That's another plot twist. But there's also the Mexican family outside the window who's looking in, and they're reminding the viewer that they have this imaginary shoe that they're, you know, the conquistador. There's so many twists and turns in this little minute commercial.
None of them really kept my interest at all.
Well, I'll tell you what I think the message was when Bill Gates, I'm sorry, Seinfeld says to Bill Gates, you know, you ever do this mind meld with people at Microsoft where, you know, you work it all out and...
Yeah, the Jupiter Magna brain.
That was the point, was to remind the viewer that Microsoft is a magical technology powerhouse.
Yeah.
See, that's what they were trying to get out.
Yeah.
You may not believe it, but you are not, you're part of the unwashed.
Because those giant Jupiter brains and those Saturn ring brains have given us a lot of crap.
Yeah, but they've also generated a major product that most people use. It's like saying, you know...
Foolishly, but yeah.
You're biased. You're very biased. And I'm very biased, too. But I'm saying, for the average user, Seinfeld, popular... I mean, think about it. Seinfeld had an Apple on his set, on the show, right, for the entire run of the show. So... He's showing up on a Microsoft commercial with Bill Gates, who's not even a part of the company anymore. It's a big thing.
I know it's Bill Gates and all, but to me, it doesn't say...
How about the little card that has his mugshot photo?
I don't know. I just think, like... I've seen funnier YouTube videos that, you know, than commercials.
That's playing into it, too.
Here's the problem, though, that I have with it, is that you're doing this kind of art piece, really, for a commercial to kind of reinforce Microsoft's relevance in the world. And
that's
Bill,
right.
Bill Gates is still relevant, but he's not relevant to Microsoft, really. He's
of
relevant as an image, but he's not a part. I mean, he's removed
symbolic.
From Microsoft. He's symbolic, but he doesn't.
He is Microsoft. He may not be a part of the company, but he is
right,
Microsoft.
But Seinfeld, to me, is not relevant anymore. You know what? Seinfeld hasn't really done much since that show.
He's done plenty. He's been doing movies.
I know, but nothing that was really good.
That B-movie was a real sidetrack, but anyway.
I'm not even, you know, I love 30 Rock, and to me, I wasn't even thrilled with what he did on 30 Rock.
Oh, that's right. Seinfeld was on there. I forgot about that.
So, I don't know. I thought the commercial was more about shoes and churros than it was Microsoft, and it just goes on forever.
The shoes don't even exist.
I know,
and the churros.
I know, and that commercial shouldn't exist. It just bothered me. I'm watching football, and I have to... Oh, sorry. John needs new, the can piece the door now because I just destroyed his shoes. But I'm trying to watch the Eagles game, and I'm being bombarded with this lame commercial throughout the whole day. I don't know.
All right, so another topic we
Let's agree
discuss.
To disagree on that
okay.
one.
I was watching it again today, and I was just amazed.
Yeah. Give me a decent product, and then we'll talk about a commercial.
Well, that's an issue. You know, I mean, if it was Seinfeld and what's his name from Google, and they were talking about Chrome, but not talking about Chrome, would it have been a successful commercial?
All right. Well, should we talk about Chrome now that we mentioned
sure.
it? And then we'll switch back to our...
So Google threw a shot across the bow. And the shot is Chrome. Chrome is the newest browser available out there. And the browser wars have been raging for a while. And Firefox has always been my favorite. And personally, it still is.
Really,
still
browser like, wars too, really.
Yeah. Yeah, because Netscape died the first time. I love Firefox, and I still love Firefox for a lot of reasons, but the number one reason why I would use Firefox over Chrome right now is because of the plugins. The plugins don't exist for Chrome, and if I had to get all that functionality in some way on Chrome, I need to have those plugins, you know, and they don't even have a plan for that. So I imagine it'll surface called widgets or something. You know, they'll have
right.
something that builds into the rest of their stuff.
But just from the little I played with Chrome, I mean, it's a nice browser.
Very
I mean,
nice browser.
For something that you know was launched kind of out of the blue, really. I mean, there had always been rumors about it, but yeah, you know, the fact that you know. Actually, it got prematurely launched because of the release of that comic that introduced it. But
well, the hype was there; they had
right.
run with it.
But for something that out of the box, their first try at a browser, it was a very good first effort.
Well, and it uses the same engine as Safari. It
right.
uses the I forget what that's called.
I was talking to my friend Jason about it. WebKit.
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 Yeah. So, you know, if you like Safari, chances are you'll like Chrome, but Chrome is a different kind of a beast. I mean, it's very minimalist in the style of Google itself, and it uses a lot of Firefox 3's best features, such as the Awesome Bar, you know, but it does so much more, too.
And I love the fact that if, you know, you have multiple tabs open in one of the applications that you're using, web-based application you're using, and one of the tabs conks out, you don't have to quit out of the whole browser. You can, it'll just stop that app and that tab, because all the tabs are treated like separate.
It's separate processes.
So that's a plus, because you know how many times I'll have five windows open and I'll be working on two different things. I'll have a Google Doc open and something else open, and the other thing will kill the whole app and I lose everything I did in Google Doc.
Yeah, incidentally, you can have Firefox use separate processes for each tab so that you could kill one process and not actually kill the entire browser. But I usually have so many tabs open that it's just not practical for me to do that. So anything else to say on that, Brian?
No, I think we said it. It's a, you know, nice effort out of the gate.
Absolutely, and I think it's only going to get better. They're going to be the one to watch. And finally, we recently had the Democratic National Convention and the Republican National Convention. I actually didn't watch anything except for McCain's speech from the RNC. I watched almost the entire DNC because I'm pretty hefty liberal.
Yeah, as did I. I did watch the Republican convention more so, and although it was just difficult to get through.
I couldn't finish watching the speech from McCain. It was very hard to watch. Painful.
I mean, during the Republican National Convention, I think I came close to destroying multiple TVs several times.
However, on the Democratic National Convention side, I was just amazed. I mean, to see all those people in that space listening to ideas that we care very much about.
Right.
You know, it was an unbelievable, no matter what the outcome of the election, no matter what else happens, you know, that was pretty inspirational, pretty amazing.
And just to get on the, you know, we go back to the Republicans, you know, I at one point in my life, I was dead in the middle, and I could go either way, depending on the candidate. But I just feel the Republican Party is so narrow-minded at this point. And a few years ago, McCain didn't bother me too much.
Well, he's very Democratic for a Republican.
But now that he's their presidential nominee, he has to fall in line, and it's just scary, some of the rhetoric you hear.
Unbelievable, in fact, that anybody would still talk that way after the Bush presidency.
To not community service and community organizers, just, I don't understand. I mean, the way, like when Rudy Giuliani, during his speech, when he mentions the word, you know, when he says Obama was a community organizer, like, you know, the place reacted like that was something evil. Like, that was something that should be just belittled, and it just amazed me that so many people would think like that. It's just so disheartening. And some of it was, I mean, Rudy Giuliani's speech may have been some of the most disgusting, despicable rhetoric ever. And the fact that he seems to think that he gets royalties for every time 9/11 is mentioned is just sickening.
Well, I never really believed in the Giuliani hype. I mean,
and this is from a guy who, after the World Trade Center got attacked the first time, put the command center for the city in the World Trade Center. Brilliant.
Smart guy.
But it's their leadership that's going to make sure it never happens again, even though it happened under them.
We'll see. So, what about you, Brian? Have you seen anything that's interesting about technology or art?
Just a few things, really. And actually, I'm not even sure if all this, you know, deals with technology and art, but first thing does, MySpace has started a concert series called Front to Back, and it's going to kick off with a one-time-only reunion of Ben Folds 5 at Chapel Hill, North Carolina, on September 18th. Although it won't show up on MySpace until October, I think. But Ben Folds, Darren Jesse, and Robert Sledge will be getting back together to play their final album, 1999's The Unauthorized Biography of Reinhold Messner, in its entirety. And that's the point of the Front to Back series. It will showcase artists performing live sets of entire albums, which is pretty cool. I can't wait to see what else they have planned for that, but looking forward to the Ben Folds 5 reunion. I wish I could have gone. Like, I said to Allison, I was like, don't worry, I don't plan on going. After I looked into expenses, I looked into hotels, and it just wasn't doable at this point. But and I think the tickets sold out in 3 minutes. They actually went on sale this morning. The next thing I want to talk about is the Large Hadron Collider. The purpose of the collider is to conduct particle experiments designed to recreate the conditions immediately after the Big Bang. Depending who you talk to, the collider will either unlock some of science's greatest mysteries or create many black holes that will swallow the Earth, killing us all. But I'm more frightened of what I saw during the Republican National Convention. We got Rickrolled during that, and it threw me off, sorry. But I'm more frightened of what I saw during the Republican National Convention than anything.
Actually, that's kind of funny. Will anybody who listens to the podcast be Rickrolled?
Possibly. We should have Rickrolled John McCain during his acceptance speech.
Too late.
Although you can, because he used the green background again. Yeah, this is the guy who says he's not going to repeat the same mistakes that Bush made over the past 8 years, but he repeated the same mistake he made 3 months ago during his campaign.
Mission accomplished.
Hello, hello. Oh my goodness. Anyway, this has totally ruined my joke about the Large Hadron Collider being less dangerous than the Republican Party. So we'll move on. However, speaking of disasters, check out a video that The Onion posted recently titled "Bush Tours America to Survey Damage Caused by His Disastrous Presidency." It's hysterical. I might put it on the show notes. I don't know at this point, unless there's something better. But it'll probably wind up there. Definitely be a link, though. But now it's time for the Technology in the Arts events calendar.
Here is your Technology and the Arts events calendar. The Experience Music Project and Science Fiction Museum and Hall of Fame in Seattle, Washington presents Robots, a designer's collection of miniature mechanical marvels, running now through October 26, 2008. This exhibition celebrates the long fascination with humankind's technological version of itself. Inspired by antique tin and wooden toys, samurai warriors, in mid-20th century Japanese film characters, these intricately detailed and beautifully designed miniatures are set against the venue's backdrop of life-size robots, androids, and cyborgs from the world of science fiction, film, and television. For more information, visit www.epmsfm.org. An exhibition titled Just In, Recent Acquisitions from the Collection, takes place at the Museum of Modern Art in New York City, now through November 30th, 2008. This installation draws from acquisitions made over the past 2 years by the Department of Architecture and Design, many on display for the first time. The selection represents the diversity found in contemporary design practice with a focus on the latest innovations in architectural, industrial, and graphic design. For more information, visit www.moma.org. To stay informed about these and other events related to technology and the arts, please remember to check out the Technology and the Arts events page at techarts.wordpress.com.
Looks like we are just about at the end of another Technology in the Arts podcast. Here's Don Lemazny with a reminder to our listeners.
Well, as always, I'd like to say to our listeners that if they have an idea for a story or know about a show or event related to technology and or art, let us know about it by emailing us at technology.arts@gmail.com. Also, feel free to send an email just to say hi. And you're always welcome to leave a comment on the Technology in the Arts blog at techarts.wordpress.com.
I think we're going to keep Rick Astley as the closing music this week. But that closes the curtain on another Technology in the Arts podcast. Stay tuned for our next show on Wednesday, September 24th, 2008. Until then, for Technology in the Arts, this is Brian Kelly.
And this is John Lemazny. Take care.
The views expressed by the hosts of Technology and the Arts are not necessarily those of guests of the program. Conversely, thoughts and opinions expressed by guests of Technology and the Arts are not necessarily shared by the hosts. For more information about the podcast you have just heard, please visit Technology and the Arts on the web at techarts.wordpress.com.